Well, you know, delivering truly comprehensive financial services, but at a level that's high enough to actually increase the number of referrals that you receive, well, that's not easy, but you can do it. And this is the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little. Together, we're going to show you how. This is the time each month where we get together and respond to your questions, address any obstacles that you're encountering, and we make it the goal each month to make sure that we don't get off of this call until all your questions are answered. So you will notice there is a question panel in your GoToWebinar control panel. If you have questions as we go along today, enter them. I'll try to keep an eye on that. And but until then, we do have a number of questions that were submitted this month. We addressed most of them directly to those submitting the questions, but I selected among them three that I thought were ideal topics for us to talk about. So as is my custom each month, I'm going to show you the questions that were submitted in advance, and these are the ones that we'll be covering today. Now, we're booked for 45 minutes on the calendar. I know you're busy. You're very calendar-driven. So if we, so I will cover all the questions today, but the point I'm saying is that if you have questions that you've got for me, go ahead and enter them into the panel. We'll see how far we get. If we go over just a little bit, I guess what I'm saying is I don't, I'm not going to limit the content just based on the fact that we have 45 minutes on the calendar. If by chance we go over, when you get back to the replay for this session, you can just click on the question that you missed. If you have to leave right on time, you can go back and just listen to the question or two that you missed. So the first question, which subject matter expert should I acquire first? And what should I focus upon with my first subject matter expert? In other words, what should we be doing together first? Well, let's start off with the business model. Let's talk about the business model the way that we envision it, as opposed to what the industry typically envisions for a financial services business model. So the way the industry is set up is not like this. The way the industry is typically set up is that the ideal client is the one coordinating each of the subject matter experts in their lives. Before we came along, every one of your ideal clients had financial people in their life. They had typically a tax person, maybe an estate planning attorney, probably people managing one or more of their accounts, if only mutual funds. And certainly every client has insurance agents before we come along. So, and then the client, according to the typical industry model, the client is coordinating all these people independently. Well, in step the trusted advisor. This is a new business model. This is the business model that we're talking about here. This is what we consistently talk about in these sessions and in the entire Advisor Pact monthly program, where you, as the client's most trusted advisor, step in and you fill the unfilled role in the client's life, and that's financial leader. By the way, let me just pause for a minute and say that we do commonly refer to you as the trusted advisor. I'm not a fan of putting trusted advisor on your business cards or you referring to yourself as a trusted advisor. What you are is the financial leader. So trusted advisor is actually the moniker that we are trying to earn from the client. So it's actually more appropriately the client's role to call you a trusted advisor, not you. but we call it, for expediency, we call it trusted advisor. But I think for the purposes of this discussion, think of yourself as the person filling the unfilled role, that unfilled role being there is no financial leader. There is no professional who will take off the client's hands this role of coordinating all of these people: tax expert, money manager, financial planner, estate planning lawyer, and insurance planning. You step in. You as the financial leader, you will pull this team together. You will have a oversight team with each of these roles filled. And the question is, which of these subject matter expert roles should you fill first? Well, if I may, the first role that you need to fill is what we call the administrative manager role. This is critical. So for the model that we are describing, the trusted advisor should be investing 80% of their time face-to-face or on the phone with existing ideal clients or with potential ideal clients. Not counted there among that time, not counted as non-ideal clients, not counted as administrative office, administrative activities, not counted there is the time spent behind the scenes serving ideal clients. But I'm just throwing it out there. We in other sessions, we've talked about the three primary roles of a trusted advisor. But let's just say, in terms of time, 80% of your time should be invested. That's the goal. 80% of your time should be invested face-to-face or on the phone with existing ideal clients or with potential ideal clients. And if you just have a few ideal clients to start off with, that means that the vast majority of that 80% of your time is out of the office or on the phone, face-to-face or on the phone with potential ideal clients. That's really where you should be. So that really raises the stakes of getting into place subject matter experts in each of these other roles so that you can invest 80% of your time out in the field or out serving clients. To do that, you need a coordinator of your team. You need an administrative support person who is going to be there to coordinate your subject matter expert team, to coordinate the people, and to coordinate the client progress meetings. That will allow you the time to go focus on your priorities, which is serving ideal clients directly and going out and getting new ideal clients. So that being the case, so what's the order of attack here? Well, the very first role you need to get into place is the administrative manager role. So let's go through the sequence of acquisition as far as subject matter experts and your deliverables team. So it's really important that the very first quote-unquote acquisition, hire, whatever you want to call it, should be your administrative manager. Now, let me pause just a moment and say this. We've worked with a lot of advisors over the years. I'm an advisor, and I have been for 30 years. So I've had a lot of teams over the years that we've built, and the key to the whole thing is an effective administrative manager. Now, in working with advisors like you, oftentimes when we first start working together, an advisor like you will tell me, well, I've got a very strong administrative support person who can serve in this role as administrative manager. I've worked with them for years, and they are very, very strong, and they are used to working with me. And that's great. If it works out, then let's say that's fabulous. The problem is that having done this for so many years, I can tell you that of the existing administrative managers in an advisor's office, only 2 of 10 existing administrative managers end up being up to the task. So I ask you to suspend judgment about your administrative manager. It's okay that you, of course, be supportive of your people and that you have confidence that your current administrative manager is up to the job. But be open-minded about the fact that if they're not, that your greater concern is the service of your ideal clients, and that if your administrative manager turns out not to be willing or not to be able to do the job, then you're going to be willing to make a change. Or be willing to bring somebody in, even if you keep your administrative support person that you've worked with for years, to do other things in the office that perhaps they've settled into. Now, I say 2 out of 10 administrative managers end up being up to the task. So is it that the system that we're teaching you is so hard? Or is it that the administrative manager, for one reason or another, is unwilling? It's of the 2 out of 10 that are able to do the job, that's great. But the 8 out of 10 that are not able to do this job, it is by far the majority of those cases that the administrative manager is not unable, but is rather unwilling to do the extra work. So whether it's a compensation issue that people tend to not enjoy taking on more work for the same pay, or whether it's just that they don't quite understand what we're trying to do, and so therefore somehow get into the position mentally that they have to approve of everything that we're changing, all the improvements that we're making, which in essence is another way of saying, you know, you need to think about who's steering this ship. Is it you? Are you steering the ship as the leader of your team, or is it the other way around, where your team is steering you, which is, you know, not being pleased with the additional work? I will tell you, the moment you decided to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, you made a decision on behalf of your entire team, and that was to step up the work. It's going to be a much more of an effort to deliver truly comprehensive financial services than to deliver whatever you were delivering before. In other words, less than truly comprehensive financial services. So the question is, does your team realize that you made this decision for them and they need to jump on board or let you know that they're not willing to make the effort? So, and then in addition to the truly comprehensive financial services, the fact that you decided to deliver comprehensive financial services through a team of subject matter experts, that yet again, whether you recognized it or not, was a decision on your part to step up the effort. You made a decision on behalf of your team to make a greater effort than you would have before, because to deliver through a team implies that the team has to operate as a team player. So among other things, means that everybody on your team has to do a little bit extra work to document their thinking, their theories, their analysis, their points of view about a client, so that the others on the team can understand their thinking. So this extra effort of communication so that others on the team will know what everybody else is thinking, that's extra effort as well. So all the way around, you've made a decision to for everyone on your team to step up the service to truly comprehensive financial services, to step up their level of communication so that they can serve on a team and others will know what they're doing because they're submitting additional work, communicating their thoughts to the others, and stepping up your administrative manager's role, because to properly coordinate this team and properly coordinate the client progress meetings, your administrative manager has taken on a bigger job as well. So if your current administrative manager is the 2 of 10 that are up to this, then that's great. If your administrative manager is of the 8 of 10 that are not able or willing to step up, then be open-minded to that. And just make sure that you understand your number one sequence of acquisition is to get an effective administrative manager in place. Operative word there, effective. So the second subject matter expert that you acquire is the financial planning subject matter expert. The financial planner really touches all areas of personal finance, all the tax, estate planning, all the planning issues flow through the financial planning subject matter expert. Therefore, getting that role in place as quickly as possible, soon after you have your administrative manager in place, that will smooth out your team. The faster you get this financial planner in place, the better. And now we're talking about, just to clarify here, this is your team of subject matter experts other than you as a trusted advisor, because this team will not only deepen your bench and define you as not a one-man band, which is also the industry's traditional model. Our industry tends to crank out one-man bands to coordinate all these areas, but these are all subject matter experts who are experts in a narrow field of finance, in this case, financial planning. In the sequence of acquisition, the next piece to put in place is money management. It's important that the client's assets get deployed properly into an asset allocation and into a management structure that supports the overall comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, which, by the way, get used to that phraseology because I tend to never use the word financial plan. It's a term that's been poisoned in our industry because it's not really well defined. Clients have it means different things to different people, and clients have yet another vision in their mind of what that means. I think what we're really talking about here is every client having a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, and that is managed and overseen by your entire team, but with the financial planning subject matter expert in the lead position for that. And so once the financial strategy is in place, then the money management needs to be in place, or the investment management, depending on what country you're from. In the U.S., we call it money management. Other parts of the world, you call this investment management or even asset management. But the point is that the client's assets, which will someday be used to fund a future goal, that head leader of that team needs to be in place next. After you have these three roles in place, then tax subject matter expert comes next, followed by the estate planning subject matter expert. And by the way, you noticed on the, we call that previous page the lollipop here. Let me go back and show you here. So you notice we call this legal instead of estate planning. That's because we do recommend that you have both an estate planning lawyer and a transaction attorney ultimately on your team. Because every client at some point in their life has a major transaction that you'll need a lawyer to review. However, every client needs estate planning on a regular basis. So we recommend that you have a legal team, quote unquote, with the team leader being the estate planning lawyer, because every client needs that on a routine basis. So we get that estate planning subject matter in place, who's your legal team leader. And once that person's in place, then you have an insurance subject matter expert. These are your leaders. This is the oversight of your client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. This is the team that puts together the comprehensive strategy and makes sure that every recommendation that comes in front of the client is in alignment with that overall strategy. So this is your core team. This is the order and sequence of acquisition. Let me talk for a minute about relationships that you already have in place. I call this low-hanging fruit. So I work with advisors, and I myself was in this situation at the beginning when I began thinking about putting this team together. Okay, so you've got this order of acquisition, but you're thinking to yourself, yeah, but I understand that's the proper order to acquire subject matter experts in theory, but I do have some people that I know and I've worked with over the years, but a kind of more of a loose relationship. So how many of you out there have a tax accountant or maybe an estate planning lawyer that you're fairly close with, that you've maybe referred clients to consistently over the years? This is what I call low-hanging fruit. So how do you deal with that? Well, I want you to consider, and we will get into this in future modules. We have monthly projects on all of these topics so that you can deal with these issues in a little bit more kind of in a detailed way. But just big picture, you should be acquiring a subject matter expert at least once every 60 days. We have a monthly project called the Deliverables Team Recruitment Process, which is a 12-step process managed and coordinated by your administrative manager that allows you to acquire a subject matter expert every 60 days until your team is fully built. What we recommend is that you alternate acquiring low-hanging fruit every other month. So let's say, okay, so we've got the order of acquisition that I just shared with you, but let's say you have a tax accountant that you know very well and have over the years. The problem is you've not sat down and explained to them this new business model that you're delivering truly comprehensive financial services through a team. that you are in the process of building an oversight team to oversee and review the client's financial affairs in all areas of finance, and that it won't take 60 days to acquire this tax expert. It will just take, you know, the amount of time that it takes to sit down and explain to them what you're doing and let them review the expectations of your new business model so that they can determine, well, first of all, understand what you're doing, and second of all, determine if they're willing to step up and deliver at the level that we're talking about. So, so that shouldn't take 60 days. Let's just say, and this is roughly right, that for low-hanging fruit, for those professionals that you already have relationships with, you just need to tighten it up to see if they're willing to serve on a more structured team the way that we're envisioning. You can acquire these low-hanging fruit in 30 days instead of 60. So we recommend, you know, maybe that's fine. Start with the low-hanging fruit. Approach them. Explain what you're doing. Explain the expectations of the new business model that you've created. And by the way, that's a monthly project. Just simply getting all your subject matter experts to understand what they're stepping up into. In other words, what specifically are you asking each subject matter expert to do in addition to what they may be envisioning? That needs to happen as well. But that can happen in 30 days. So you acquire, let's say hypothetically, a tax expert, low-hanging fruit, somebody that you know pretty well, then alternate that with the order of acquisition. So then the very next subject matter expert you get in place is financial planner. That would take 60 days. So let's say 30 days for your tax friend, 60 days to acquire a formal financial planning subject matter expert. Now, 90 days in, you have two of your five key positions filled. Then you go back and alternate. Maybe you've got an existing money management relationship, perhaps with your firm. The problem is finding an oversight money management leader to oversee all the money managers or ETFs or mutual funds, to somebody to oversee the money management. But in any event, let's call that low-hanging fruit. So that's 30 days. Then you go out and find an insurance subject matter expert. And then you put your team, your legal team in place. So the point is, you've got three low-hanging fruit. You alternate months to get them in place. And that by the end of this whole process, you know, in basically 8 months, you've gotten all these positions in place. But altered the acquisition sequence just slightly because you had people that you knew that you could approach that could shortcut the process a little bit. Now, with those that you go out and interview and take the full 60-day process, again, we have an entire monthly project to describe the deliverables team recruitment process. But let's just say for the financial planner, what is it that expands it from 30 to 60 days? What are you doing? Why is it taking an additional 30 days? Well, if you go through the full process, what you're really doing and you're spending an extra month doing is you want to find at least three candidates that could fill the position that you can choose among. It's much better rather than just having one candidate that you have a selection. And so with the full deliverables team recruitment process, it takes 60 days because we keep going until you find three candidates that could fill the position well. And then you, by compare and contrast, you sit down and talk with each of the three and you select one. So already have loose relationships in place. So again, to reemphasize, these subject matter experts that we're talking about here that are coordinated by your administrative manager, these are other than you and they're other than your administrative manager. So I often say that until you acquire 10 ideal clients, you can pretty much make anything work, even if it's not perfect. So if until you have 10 ideal clients, you as a trusted advisor or you as the your administrative manager could fill on an interim basis, that is to say on a temporary basis, one or both of you could fill one or more of these roles: tax, money management, financial planning, estate planning, and insurance. But that after 10 ideal clients, you need to get it in your mind that neither the trusted advisor nor the administrative manager are going to be involved with any of these areas of subject matter expertise. And that even means your administrative manager ultimately, after, let's say, 10 ideal clients, should not be supporting these subject matter experts either. They need to come with their support in place. A matter of fact, we recommend you only interview subject matter experts that have at least two administrative support people in place before you meet them. So anyway, if you don't interview subject matter experts that have their own administrative support, then my prediction is that your administrative manager will be asked to fill that role, and that's not good. It's fine until you get 10 clients. After you get 10 ideal clients, let's say 15, 20, 30 ideal clients, there's just not time. Your administrative manager does not have time to coordinate the team and coordinate the client meetings and support you as a trusted advisor while still supporting the subject matter experts. So there are three stages of implementation as you're implementing truly comprehensive financial services. And the reason I want to bring this up is it is so critical for you to really absorb these three stages. When a member joins the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, which is our full service model, that is our software that we, that was the world's first comprehensive financial services delivery system. The only reason I bring it up here in the Advisor Pack Monthly program is that we are teaching you, in essence, how to build your own Trusted Advisor Toolkit. At some point, many, if not most of you, will matriculate into the Trusted Advisor Toolkit once you have enough clients. But until then, what can you do? We're just going to show you how we built the toolkit so that you can be building your own until such time as you're ready for the toolkit. Point is, in the toolkit, when we're working with teams, we make it very clear there are three stages of implementation when it comes to getting truly comprehensive financial services in place. First is assessing your administrative manager. This takes anywhere from 4 to 8 months. Depends on how effective your administrative manager is. And as I said, it's important to step carefully here because so few administrative managers end up being effective or able to do this role the way we need it. And so you spend the first stage assessing your administrative manager as an administrator, making sure they're an effective leader, that they're able to get things done through other people, and that your subject matter experts and your clients come to rely on your administrative manager and take action because of their relationship with your administrative manager. Your administrative manager needs to be very capable and needs to be of the proper temperament and have the leadership qualities so that when they contact one of your subject matter experts, your subject matter experts very promptly do what they're asked from the administrative manager. Same goes for the clients. Call up a client and, let's say you need some information or documents from a client, you have to make sure your administrative manager has the skills to get the client to produce the information and documents that your team needs in order to do their job. So the first stage is to assess your administrative manager because their job coordinating your deliverables team and coordinating all your client progress meetings is critical. And so we take the entire first stage of implementation simply to make sure your administrative manager is up to the task. The second stage of implementation, after we get the minimum standards of truly comprehensive financial services in place by making sure your administrative manager is capable of getting all that in place, then the second stage is to really finish building out your team. So in the first stage, while we're assessing your administrative manager, typically we get at least two subject matter experts in place. And by the way, if you think about it, that's the minimum definition of a team, is a minimum of two people. So usually at this point, we have at least two, maybe more subject matter experts in place. We pause at stage two and finish building out the team. Make sure that every role has a subject matter expert leader in place for oversight. That would be the tax, the money management, the financial planning, the estate planning, and the insurance. All five of those areas has a leader on your team in place. And then that team is the oversight team. This is your, when we say your team of subject matter experts, this is your team of subject matter expert leaders. This is the oversight team. Once those leaders are in place, or you say your team is in place, then they make sure that every area of personal finance has an implementation specialist in place to carry it out. So, for example, your tax subject matter expert makes sure there's an implementation subject matter expert preparing the tax return in place. Same goes for money management, financial planning, estate planning, and insurance. Once you have the oversight team in place, they make sure that there is an implementation professional in place for every area of personal finance, for every client. And then the third stage of implementation, this is the final stage, is I do call it fully functional team. This is what we're shifting our focus away from your administrative manager at this stage. And on the toolkit, if you were working on the toolkit, we as a toolkit team would be focusing then in the third stage here, be focusing on your subject matter experts specifically. We would be working more with them than with your administrative manager at this point. And if you're doing this, not in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, then it's your job to make sure that your team is fully functional. And I will just parenthetically say it. I try to always spin things around to the positive side to make sure that we're describing things in a positive manner. But I think it is proper at this point to say that what we end up doing primarily is kind of eliminating the dysfunctions of a team. So yes, we're trying to get your team to be fully functional at this stage three, but what we end up doing is just focusing, identifying, and eliminating dysfunction. So we make sure that the subject matter experts are in full command of the deliverables checkpoints. We recommend that you create these deliverables checkpoints with your team of subject matter experts. If you're on the toolkit, we have 143 deliverables checkpoints in each of these areas of personal finance that we rotate through on an annual basis. If you're not using the toolkit, then we recommend you sit down with your oversight team of subject matter experts and have them tell you what are all the checkpoints in each of these five areas of personal finance that need to happen on an annual basis in order for a client to achieve their actualize their comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So make sure that all the deliverables checkpoints are in place, and in terms of fully functioning team, making sure that your team is overseeing all of the deliverables checkpoints that you and your team have established on an annual basis. Secondly, every subject matter expert contributes to every client progress meeting. What you'll notice from a leadership standpoint is just the differences between people. So some of your subject matter experts are going to be very vocal and are going to contribute quite a bit in preparing for client progress meetings. And others, just by the mere observation of their personality, they tend to be more like wallflowers. And unless you ask them or prompt them, just their personality is that they're not going to contribute. They're not going to say anything. So part of this eliminating the dysfunction is to make sure and to measure, to be sure that every subject matter expert is contributing to every client progress meeting. So that's, this is how you measure whether your team is fully functional. The other thing that we tend to struggle with a bit is subject matter experts who are very good at what they do, but they don't seem to understand this playing a team player part of it. So if let's say your subject matter expert makes a recommendation to a client for one of the client progress meetings, it's important that they submit all their background work and analysis and you know, memorandums, interactions with other subject matter experts, all of that needs to be submitted with their work. So it's not enough to just have a subject matter expert submit a recommendation for a client for an upcoming meeting, but they need to submit all the background source materials that went into the making of that recommendation. It's kind of like when I was back in third grade. My math teacher would tell me, you know, Mark, it's not enough to just show me the answer to the math problem. You have to show me all the work. You have to show me how you came to your answer by showing me all the math behind your answer. And so this is the same point here. We don't have any doubt that your subject matter experts are all capable and skilled. But if they're going to play a team player and they're going to communicate with the others on the team how they arrived at their recommendations and decisions about a particular client, they need to submit all the background source documents and all their work behind the scenes that allowed them to come to that conclusion. And then we expect every subject matter expert to provide collegial but very vigorous peer review. So it's the role of every subject matter expert at some point to step up and question recommendations of the others on your team, as I said, in a very collegial manner, but just to play, you know, call it devil's advocate or client advocate, it's the role of every subject matter expert to provide peer review at some point during the calendar year for every client. And every subject matter expert is expected to collaborate with the other subject matter experts in between meetings. So you look at these five areas of functionality. These are measures of success. So say stage three of implementation of truly comprehensive financial services is measuring that at what level are all these five things happening. So those are the three stages of implementation, assessing your administrative manager, finishing building out your team so that you have both the oversight team and the implementation team fully in place, and then ensuring your team is functional. This is the building out of your team. This is the stages that you work with your team to get truly comprehensive financial services in place, delivered through a team of subject matter experts. Second question. I've heard you mention the 10 client deliverables. What are the differences between the 10 client deliverables and the 143 deliverables checkpoints? And how do we deliver on the 10 client deliverables? Well, that's a good catch. Let's go through the 10 client deliverables, and then I'll tell you what the difference is between the 10 client deliverables and the 143 deliverables checkpoints. So to understand the 10 client deliverables, you have to understand the three meeting process. So another monthly project that we have for you in sequence at some point is the installing of the three meeting process. The three meeting process is an important framework that you must have in place with your ideal clients in order to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. All right. So we have meeting number one in the three meeting process is the comprehensive safety review meeting. The second meeting in the process is the goal progress outlook meeting. And the third meeting in the process is the annual review. So these are the three meetings you have in place with every ideal client. You book them a year in advance. You're meeting with every client every 4 months. So over a 12-month period, you have each of these three meetings. So in theory, there's no four-month period that you, well, let me say it. Okay, what I was going to say is there's no four-month period that you don't see all your ideal clients. But said, the flip side of saying that would be to say that every 4 months you see every ideal client. So you have what we call that a meeting cycle is a 4 month period. So what are the 10 client deliverables? Okay, so the 10 client deliverables actually are the definition of truly comprehensive financial services. So once you've delivered all 10 of the 10 client deliverables, then you've delivered on truly comprehensive financial services. And the 10 client deliverables are delivered annually. So you go through and cycle through these 10 client deliverables every year with every client. The first one is a master goal tracker. It's just the acknowledgement that you are tracking client goals, the name of the goal, the target date for the accomplishment of the goal, and the amount required to achieve the goal, but you're tracking it on a master tracking basis across all your clients. You're making a big deal about every client goal, and you are tracking the goals that are coming up. And the master goal tracker is simply, by the way, the master goal tracker is a monthly project that in sequence at some point you will get this as a project for your team to implement. And on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, it's an automated app. So it's an app that tracks all the client goals. But in essence, it's just looking across all your clients and look and tracking when their goals are supposed to be funded according to the client's desires. So that's done during the Goal Progress Outlook meeting. That's one of the activities that's covered in the GPO meeting. The greatest probability strategy is another monthly project that we have for you. In essence, the greatest probability strategy is a step-by-step implementation plan of action. It's updated prior to every client progress meeting. So each of the three meetings, you'll update the GPS, the client's GPS, which is nothing more than a simple document which describes every recommendation from anyone on your team. Said another way, there are no recommendations coming from your team that are not listed on the GPS. The progress reports, where you another monthly project that we will provide in sequence to you in the Advisor Pack monthly program. But at every client progress meeting, these are updated. And this is the comparison of the client's current financial assets benchmarked against the goals that they're out to accomplish. So, the progress reports memorialize the progress that the client's making towards their goals, and we're getting rid of all concepts of comparing progress against benchmarked against the markets or investment benchmarks or the economy or anything like that. This is simply benchmarking the client's progress against the goals that they've said that they want to accomplish. Money management or investment management, depending upon where you are in the world, this is the management of the client's money. This is updated prior to every client progress meeting. So this is an activity that has occurred every 4 months for every client progress meeting. The annual tax projection. Now, taxes are on a little bit different count. They're on a calendar year. So this idea of doing an income tax projection, that would be before the end of the tax year. So that's deliverables checkpoint number 5. Deliverables checkpoint number 6, also taxes, is a review of the client's income taxes prior to the filing deadline. So, and that's different at different places in different countries in the world, depending on where you are. But that's the 6th deliverable. And the 7th deliverable is to review the estate plan. That's accomplished in the Goal Progress Outlook meeting. The goal blueprint, which is a little bit different to be distinguished from the master goal tracker, this is a one-pager. Again, it's a monthly project that you and your team will complete at some point. It's a one-pager for every client goal, spelling out on one sheet of paper all the strategies and tactics and the funding plan for every client goal. This, by the way, by clients, we've got data on this. Of all the 10 deliverables, this deliverable number 8 is the most, clients say this is the greatest deliverable as far as the highest value deliverable from the client perspective. Deliverable number 9 is an update of the cash reserves plan and the debt plan that's done annually at the annual review. And finally, number 10, it's the comprehensive safety review exercise that's done during the comprehensive safety review meeting. Those are the 10 client deliverables. Now, the 143 deliverables checkpoints, by contrast, those are the deliverables checkpoints. Okay, so every one of these client deliverables has a list of checklist items underneath each of these 10 to ensure that these 10 things get done on an annual basis. And when you add up all the checklist items that fall beneath each of these 10 client deliverables, that's the 143 deliverables checkpoints. By the way, we're at the 45-minute point. If you have to go, I understand completely. Go about your day. When you come back, once the replay is live on the on our system, you'll get an email. And you can just click on the questions that you missed, or you can, you know, click to just jump straight to the question that you missed so that you can hear everything that we talk about today. So I'm going to keep rolling here. So just looking at these 10 client deliverables in a little bit different way, I think it's kind of a little bit confusing for you to understand that some of these 10 client deliverables are done at multiple meetings, obviously. So some you do at every meeting, some you just do once a year. Here's looking at that same issue just a little bit different way. If you look at the comprehensive safety review, which is one of the meetings in the three-meeting process, there are four of the 10 client deliverables that are reviewed for this meeting, the comprehensive safety review, and they are the comprehensive safety review exercise, the money management oversight, which is done at every meeting, the progress reports being updated, which is at every meeting, and the greatest probability strategy, which again is updated at every meeting. So of the 10 client deliverables, four are completed for the comprehensive safety review. If you then look at the goal progress outlook, this is the most intensive. There are six of the 10 client deliverables that are accomplished in the goal progress outlook meeting with the client every year. You do the goal blueprint, the master goal tracker, the estate planning oversight, and then of course the one that's at every meeting, the money management oversight, the progress reports being updated, and the GPS being updated. And then for the annual review, there are four of the 10 client deliverables accomplished at the annual review: money management oversight, cash reserves and debt plan is updated annually at this annual review. The progress reports are, of course, updated, and the greatest probability strategy sheet is updated as it is at every meeting. I think what simplifies, and by the way, once you get all this in place, this is what we refer to as your financial services monopoly. There is very unlikely, I would say, almost an infinitesimally small chance that anybody else in your community is delivering at this level. This is your monopoly. This is what, when clients, potential clients, actually understand what you're doing, this puts you in a category of one with nobody else in your community delivering at anywhere near this level. And I think the easiest way to think about this is, don't think of it as three meetings with 10 client deliverables. That's the internal kind of complex way to look at it. From the client perspective, I want you to think of all this, the three-meeting process and the 10 client deliverables, as three simple conversations every year. You have three priority conversations every year. The first meeting, you know, the comprehensive safety review, it simply distills down to the simple concept with the client of, let's discuss ways to increase the safety of your plan. You're going to have an organized conversation, which we call the comprehensive safety review exercise, which is a monthly project at some point for you. But the concept is just to talk to the client about increasing the safety of your plan. Now, there are three conversations in the Goal Progress Outlook meeting. First one is, let's update your commitment to your goals. So every year you get a client's update of their commitment to what they're trying to accomplish. Secondly is, to update their feelings about their estate plan. You know, this is one that's typically feelings. It's the people that are going to get their money eventually and the people that are going to control their money, even if they are alive but unable to manage their own affairs. You know, it's their feelings about these people and if they're still up to the task or if this is the way that the client wants their estate plan to be. And then the third conversation in the Goal Progress Outlook is let's talk about protecting your financial assets. Let's actually have a conversation about the deliverables checkpoints that back this conversation up is something that you do internally with your team to make sure there's no fraud or to make sure that every asset, every financial asset is reviewed from a safety standpoint internally. And you only have this conversation with the client if there's an action item that comes out of that internal behind the scenes review. You know, it's fraud protection for the client. So those are the three conversations in the Goal Progress Outlook meeting. And then the annual review has a very simple conversation to the client. Let's update your overall strategy and let's make any necessary course corrections that if you've drifted off course in any way, shape, or form, we've got recommendations documented right on your GPS to get back on track. That's why I was saying earlier that the 10 client deliverables and the proper delivery of those, they actually represent truly comprehensive financial services. So one of the reasons that makes this a financial services monopoly for you is there's probably not a single firm in your community that has specifically defined the term comprehensive financial services. You have. It's three conversations, it's deliverables, checkpoints, and 10 client deliverables behind the scenes. You have done what other firms have failed to do. You've actually put a specific definition to this term, comprehensive financial services. And no other firm in your community has likely done that. Final question for today, what should we charge for delivering truly comprehensive financial services? Okay, just to fly through this concept, your compensation has a much closer relationship to your confidence than it does to anything else. And so I'm going to give you some advice that it's taken me 30 years of being in this business to come to this point, to be able to give you this advice. And I'm going to show you some mistakes that I've made along the way in terms of a warning, don't go there. So let me kind of walk through this. First and foremost is only work with ideal clients. It's a monthly project. Every one of you is at a different stage in the sequence. So if you have not gone through the monthly project having to do with ideal client profile, that makes that exercise, that monthly project, a very high stakes exercise. So when we say ideal clients, we mean you've got an ideal client profile and you're very strict about it. You only work with people who meet that profile, and that if somebody meets that profile and you invite them into your community of ideal clients, that's the only group that at some point that's all you will work with. Now, I understand that for all of these things that we're working on together, there is the only question is the transition. How do you get there from where you are now? So I realize you may not now only be working with ideal clients, but that's the goal someday. That's my advice. Have your business model clear in your head to where at some point you don't have, you know, A, B, C, you know, silver, platinum, gold level clients. You just have Platinum A ideal clients, and that's all you will work with someday. That's the business model. Second, I recommend work by referral only. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but we've got quite a bit of data on this. If we can shortcut this conversation simply by saying that this is the way your potential ideal clients want to work with you. In other words, how do the majority of potential ideal clients wish to find you? Like, what method by which do they want to find someone that they will someday call their most trusted advisor? And the data is very clear on this. Your potential ideal clients want to find out about you from a well-served client of yours. So they would much prefer to learn about you and to get your name and contact information from a well-served client. Now, I realize there's a bit of a chicken or egg situation here, you know, but if I don't have ideal clients, how can I get referred? I understand that we're working, as with all of the work we're doing together, on the how do you get there from here? So we will talk about that. There is a strategy for that. I'm just saying that the business model is, first, work only with ideal clients, and second, get your business model set up that you work by referral only. Even if you're the one that referred an individual into your firm because you don't have any ideal clients currently. And then my whole final segment on this is just the encouragement is not to do what I did. Don't set your compensation too low. That's the biggest rookie error. And when I say rookie, I was 12 years into the business before I even set my compensation incorrectly. So my advice to you is set your compensation a little bit above what you're currently confident in delivering. So make sure that you are pricing yourself appropriately high. Now, I'll go through what we did, and it's kind of a warning, don't do this, but I will say that we have many advisors, and this is over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit side, but we have many advisors, because we track this, who are charging $50,000 a year or more for the 10 client deliverables. So we went through the 10 client deliverables. This is, you know, we have many advisors charging $50,000 a year for that. So if clients are willing to pay $50,000 a year for these 10 client deliverables, the question is begged, why would you charge less? I'm not telling you to charge $50,000 per year per client. What I am saying is don't undercharge yourself. So charge as high as your confidence will allow. And for many advisors, including myself now, we charge $50,000 a year for the 10 client deliverables. And I will say, because it immediately begins occurring to advisors, you know, what are the compliance ramifications of charging $50,000 a year? I won't go into that here. If you have a question about that, submit it separately. And maybe in a future month, I'll walk you through the logic on this. But all but two of the 10 client deliverables are outside business activities. So it's a little bit different in every country. Australia in particular, you don't have commissions, but I'm just making the point that two of the 10 client deliverables, that's in essence financial planning and money management, represent investment advice. But everything else, eight of the 10 client deliverables represent outside business activities, and therefore most advisors that we work with set up a separate business entity to do and charge for eight of the 10 client deliverables, with the other two client deliverables being investment advice and therefore regulated. So don't do this. This is what we did, or this is what I did. In the year 2000, when I started implementing all this, I set my price based on the costs that it cost my firm to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So my costs were just at $8,000 per client per year. So I thought, okay, I'll charge $97.50 so I can cover my costs and make a little profit. And I had 100 ideal clients. Okay. So I figured if I had 100 ideal clients paying me $97.50 a year, I'd probably be doing okay. That was the year 2000. Then I realized that's too narrow of a margin. My subject matter experts are making more money than I am. So I didn't increase them a lot. I also didn't like the $97.50. It occurred to me that, and some clients had comments about this, it sounded like some promotion on TV where they're selling something for $99.95. But that's not how we came to that $97.50, but it just looked not right. So in 2004, we increased it to $10,000. We grandfathered our existing clients and ultimately got them all up to $10,000, but in essence raised our fee to $10,000. So it's a round number. We were still only a couple thousand dollars over our cost. 2007, we increased $12,000 per year. I was still kind of working on the cost side, but at least at this point, I was thinking $1,000 per month for some clients paying us that in that manner. For clients that were we were debiting funds from their accounts to pay our fee, it was $4,000 for every meeting, $4,000 every 4 months. That's $12,000 a year. So it was divisible. But I was still not thinking properly about this. I was still thinking of the cost side. I was really hypnotized by issues that were not the primary issues. Then in 2009, we got our traction and got our mental courage around what we were providing. Unfortunately, it was 9 years of unnecessarily low compensation from clients, but we raised to $25,000. And then in 2011, 4 years ago, we increased to $50,000 per client per year. Now, this comes into play the what we call the law of the crucial few. Some people call this the 80-20 rule. But the concept was what we discovered when we were charging $12,000 per year is that we had 20% of our clients at 100, that's 20 clients, that were capable of providing 80% of our revenue. That meant that they were able and willing to pay four times the $12,000. It's just, and my challenge was figure out which clients are in that position and what would we do for them to add value? Well, without getting into all of that, because we will cover that in future months if you have questions about that, the point, that's how we fully implemented truly comprehensive financial services. We started delivering at that level. My advice to you in not making the mistake I made of having to keep increase your fee is to at the very least, as far as guiding your confidence, figure out what your costs are to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, and at a very, very minimum, charge double that. So I said for us, our cost to deliver truly comprehensive financial services was $8,000 per year. Under this theory, you should charge at least $16,000. Make sure you're making as much to coordinate the team and to be the client's financial leader. You're making as much as the subject matter experts. That only makes sense. And it occurred to me there are only two compensation models. First is the cost-based method, which for 9 years I was kind of hypnotized by this. And all this basically says it's almost like a retail model. You know, my cost plus some reasonable markup for profit. I'm proposing that is not the way to approach the business model in our business. And it took me, unfortunately, 9 years to figure this out. The other method is the client value-based model. This is what you should focus on. And I'm telling you the mistakes I made so that you can avoid this. This is what we should have done from day one. And this is what our clients are doing now. The client value-based model says it focuses on your true value to potential clients. It focuses more on what your ideal client is willing to pay. In other words, how they value what you're doing as opposed to just marking up a percentage over your cost. So it's really the whole notion of what's possible with Advisor Pact. You know, if you're making a pact with your clients that I'm going to coordinate everything, I'm going to pay close attention, and if things drift off course in real time, I will catch it on my own proactively and will make course corrections in your life so that everything is not only fully transparent and you understand exactly what you're paying and what everybody's doing on your financial team, but I am protecting you as well. So I am holding myself out there and I'm making a pact with you to protect you, your financial assets and your financial strategy to protect you from things that could happen out there. So what's a client willing to pay for that? Well, this is what we did. We ramped it up, and this was a very not intelligent way to do it. When we got to 2009, we were at that point focused on at least doubling our cost to deliver and charging the client so that we are getting a fair compensation for the fact that no other single member of our team is capable of doing what we're doing. In other words, without us as the keystone, the whole thing would fall apart anyway, and which is in the lives of existing clients, this is their experience before they meet you. They've got to coordinate all these people, and they don't have the deliverables or the checkpoints or the skill or the willingness or nobody understands how to step up and serve in that role of financial leader. We started to begin to make the connection between what the clients were willing to pay and our true value in the equation in 2009. And then by 2011, we fully implemented the client fit value-based method. We had been implementing the advisor value score for many years at this point. We knew that over 95% of our clients described us as indispensable, and the way that we coordinated all their personal financial affairs, and we began charging in alignment with that. I will say that the sad thing about this is we raised our compensation after we saw our clients doing this. So talk about slow. We were advising advisors like you, and then we just observed out there in the marketplace after having advisors implement the advisor value score, which was described in episode number one, if you want to go back and listen to that. But our advisor clients like you are the first ones that realize that if you're really focusing on what do clients value this service at? This is what our advisor clients were observing, and we were a little bit slow to the party. But I just want to finish this whole segment by saying that survival income is okay. So when you're thinking about charging anything up to $50,000 per year per client, and maybe even more than that, my point is not to twist your arm to charge necessarily $50,000 per year. Charge whatever your confidence level will allow. I'm just showing you what's possible under the theory that this is what clients are willing to pay for the 10 client deliverables. We can tell you with authority about that. But the question is, how do you get from here to there? So how do you keep the doors open and pay for the electric light bulb fees every month to keep your electricity going and so forth? It's okay to accept a client that what my friend Bill Bachrach describes as survival income. So the question is, can I take a smaller client while I'm on this path of increasing my compensation to a much higher level? I say yes, survival income is okay, so long as it's upfront and fully disclosed. That everyone understands your business model. The way I did it and have continued to do it is this way. If a client comes in, they understand that if not now, someday you're business model, your notion in your mind is that I will only work with a community of ideal clients. So it's only fair to the non-ideal clients, if you do accept them here and there, that they understand that yes, you're accepting their business today, but that someday you're not going to be working under those terms. I also tell you that I hear advisors describing their compensation method, and in many cases, it's unnecessarily complex, overly complicated in terms of the pricing options. The best I've seen, and what has worked the best for us, but just out in the field looking at different pricing models and options and so forth for clients to work with an advisor, two simple, highly contrasted options are best. Option A or option B. you describe, you know, to work with us, there's only two ways to work with us. Three is okay, but it starts to get gangly and in many cases, too many options. If you just offered two options, what would they be? You know, I would propose that you keep it limited to two and try to make that work. The key is with survival income, make sure that you're not making any long-term obligations with non-ideal clients, no future entanglements, no ongoing service. With survival income, it's purely transactional. That will keep your life simple, and you'll avoid a lot of the mistakes that I and many other advisors before us have made by just making sure that survival income does not come attached with any ongoing service expectations. So it would look something like this. Mr. Potential Ideal Client, Mrs. Potential Ideal Client. Option A to work with me is truly comprehensive financial services, $50,000 a year. You work with me. You work with my team of highly skilled subject matter experts. We coordinate all your personal financial affairs, and we make this advisor pact with you, and you explain fully how that works. Option B, which is the only other way to work with you, is we will create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy for you, highly detailed. Let's say hypothetically, it's $10,000 one-time fee. We'll create the plan. We'll sit down with you and go through it thoroughly, but then you go implement. That's the simple option A, option B recommendation. No future service expectations. You're not setting up any future entanglements or anything like that. And so that is what we recommend. I'm sorry we went over, but that's it for the monthly session for the Advisor Pack monthly program. You're doing great out there, and we love working with you. Until next month, this is Mark Little, wishing you all the best in implementing.